Triple Nine iron for him. They're gonna go nuts when he hits this thing.
Yesterday's price is not today's price.
Yo, yo, yo. Welcome in, golf fans. This is the Preferred Lines podcast in an early edition this week covering all things Players Championship and TPC Sawgrass. I'm extremely excited to be on site this week, nearly all week up in Ponte Vedra Beach. I've got an incredible show lined up for you tonight to preview the event, an exciting guest that I'm going to bring on momentarily. But I must mention that the show is proudly supported by the good people over at RotoBaller. The promo code, if you want to get access to all of the written and video content that we do over there, is Lines. That's L-I-N-E-S. That will get you everything. That will get you the Model Maniac, Spencer Aguiar, Joe Nicely. It's going to get you in the Discord channel, which the matchups continue to be red hot. We are 2-1 so far this week. We are recording this podcast a little bit early before the final round conclusion of Bay Hill, which looks to be like a jam-packed leaderboard. We've got some controversy, all the things that we love to see at the top of a leaderboard in a PGA Tour tournament. Thank you for joining us on this show. If you have time and you're on the YouTube channel, please feel free to subscribe to the YouTube channel. It does me a great deal of help. If you want to share the show with a friend, we have the fifth major this week. We have a massive event. We've got a premier field. We've got the biggest purse in professional golf, and we're excited to cover it for you here in just a second. So without further ado, I'm excited to finally welcome this person to Preferred Lines. We've been trying to work out the time difference. We had a little lapse this morning and myself realizing that daylight savings time doesn't quite exist over in the UK just yet for another 3 weeks. We're excited to bring him on now, of course, from the Golf Betting System and the Golf Betting System podcast. One of the originals, one of the very first people that I followed when I started following golf content on X. Welcome to the show, Steve Bamford. How are you this morning or afternoon UK time, we now know?
Joe, I'm great. How are you? Is that a true story? I was one of the first that you followed. You
pulled absolutely. So when was your first piece of golf content in terms of the betting space?
This is our 15th year. 2009.
Amazing.
Can you believe that? And we're still around.
Still doing it, man.
Yeah, we're still doing it. We're still grinding week in and week out.
Yeah, with Sunday over there, obviously I was up a little bit too early, but happy Mother's Day to your mom. Happy Mother's Day to your wife. Your son's going to go over there and see, and I hope that you have a great day. And I appreciate you making some time for me afternoon there.
No, I wanted to be on the show for so long, as you know. So it's great to be on board, Joe. Thank you.
Yeah, so we have, Steve, we've got the Players Championship. I want to get sort of right into that. I want to talk a few topics, sort of overarching professional golf right now. But were you surprised, Steve, as I was when the field was released, that Tiger Woods isn't playing?
Yes, did note that. He's stated, isn't he, that he wants to compete on a monthly basis. So clearly this would have been a part of that schedule. It's just sad, isn't it? It's sad not to see Tiger involved. So his performance at the Genesis was okay, but yeah, we just want Tiger to be healthy and competing. So it's
all right, Steve. So I wanted to ask you a little bit about the difference, and we're sort of getting this influx. It was just sports betting legalized down here in Florida. We currently have one book, the Hard Rock Sports Book. You have so many options, and I was looking at them earlier today over there, and it seems the difference to me is with the each way placing, obviously, that you're able to get. How does that affect sort of how you bet golf and the difference that you've noticed in the sportsbook availability over there in Europe versus here in the US?
Well, the availability here in the UK is massive. It has been. But like you say, I mean, we've been able to use each way betting here, well, I mean, since we started in 2009. Now, those actual terms have changed as well. You know, when we started in 2009, the each way places would be five places across the industry, and it would be a quarter of the odds for the place. So, of course, you're putting, let's say we're putting £2 or $2 on, you're putting the first dollar on the win bet and the second dollar on the each way bet. They're two separate bets. Yeah. So what you would be getting with those old five places a quarter of the odds would be clearly 25% return on the place of the overall odds. So if it was 100-1 shot, you'd be effectively getting 25-1 the place, $25 back on a $1 stake. That's, though, disappeared of late, really. What you tend to get over here now, there's still some of that around, but it tends to be a 50 odds on the place. So that's obviously 20%. But what you do get is extended places.
Yeah.
So we have sportsbooks over here like Coral, like Ladbrokes, who are regularly offering 10 places each way on PGA Tour events. That tends to be full field events. Bet365 are another one. They have extended market and each way extra facility where you can actually place 8 places each way or even 10 places each way and 12 places each way, all at a 50 odds. Now, clearly, the odds come down on those players.
Yeah.
But you are maximizing your chances of actual getting a return, which is that. And for Bet365 and for others like Boyle Sports, that 8, 10 and 12 places each way is available on short fields like this week at Bay Hill. Which is a phenomenal product, really.
Yeah. Is that when you bet even at the top of the board, Steve, like if you were going to take, let's say, a Xander or a Patrick Cantlay, someone in that 15-20-1 range, are you always taking the each way option? Or is there some point where you cut it off and say, I'd rather get the extra 2 points on the outright and forego that?
Well, with Xander, he doesn't tend to win, does he? So,
no.
I don't know. Sorry. Yeah. But I suppose it depends on what kind of strategy you're using. I always look at it. I mean, if you're betting a longer price and say, I don't know, what would be a great example? Like a Matty Schmidt this week. You know, he went into that Puerto Rico Open with a form of just everything miscut. But you can tell with Matty Schmidt, he's a good player at that kind of level on a birdie fest, which the Puerto Rico Open is going to be. And then lo and behold, he's T2 going into Sunday. That kind of bet, he would have been around about a 66-80-1 chance over here. But do you take the shorter places and the better odds, or do you take the longer places and the shorter odds? It depends, I suppose, if you genuinely believe that player is going to win, or if it's genuinely an each way punt that you're basically betting that he's going to finish in those top 6, 7, 8 positions. So it depends what strategy as a punter, as I would call them, a better that you want to use.
Yeah, it's a risk reward thing. I totally get that. You mentioned you've been doing golf betting content for 15 years. I wanted to ask you a little bit about the evolution. Like now, there are every single statistical analytic you can imagine is available that I'm sure you had no access to 15 years ago, from ball speed to apex height and all this stuff. And we as bettors tend to, myself, I feel like I do this, Steve, as I start to get really deep in the weeds with looking at some of this stuff. How much are you utilizing it at this point? Is it more of like, I want to look at strokes gain total and just see who's playing the best? Or do you think us as a golf betting community as a whole is getting too far into individualized analytics?
Can you imagine what it's going to be like when AI sort of gets built into this as well? I mean, you think it's complicated at the moment, Joe. I don't know.
Yeah.
I go through phases, I really do. And I'm at a phase right now where we've seen 100-1 winners week after week, 80-1. Yeah. I think the shortest price we saw was potentially Knapp a few weeks ago.
40. I had 40.
40 over here. There was a little bit of 50s available early. That's the shortest price we've seen in 2024 on the PGA Tour win. And it's when amazing. You go through these phases, and I'm a kind of person that does behind the scenes, I mean, I don't know if it comes across in my content, but I do a lot of work on the statistical side of things. A lot of the work I do myself.
Yeah.
And it's difficult because last season I saw a lot of convergence of winners that tallied with exactly the kind of research that I was doing. So if I wasn't picking that particular winner, I knew that that player was, you know, it was what was very visible in the research that I was doing. I just didn't pick them.
Yeah.
This year, it's just year to date. And I genuinely think that a lot of this has clearly got to do with the fact we've now started a 2024 season at the Century. Rather than having that carry over from as early as September last year, they used to run the Fortinet.
Yeah.
That's clearly moved the statistics around, and we're not dealing at the moment with the same animal that we were dealing four, five, six months ago in terms of form and statistics. So I don't know. I'm kind of in a quandary. And I'm having this quandary on the Golf Betting System podcast with the other two, with Paul and with Barry, who's on there. It's like I've got to the stage now where I'm literally going to just go on gut feel, back it up with some statistics, and just go for that. Just try and find some key numbers that I think you do need as a player going into a tournament. And, you know, if my gut feel players haven't got those, maybe move them to one side. But if I'm seeing a picture that isn't perfect, but it's adequate, just go with it.
Yeah. That's kind of where I'm at.
It's just golf betting, Joe, isn't it? You get ups and downs.
And I've always, you know, Steve, I've always been exactly what you would say. Like, I would consider myself a feel and a gut better. And I try to, and this is difficult. And it kind of brought me back to this, Steve. And I don't know how much you've caught of the Full Swing series, if you caught any of those episodes yet, but they dive deep into a couple of different players like Rory, Joel Damon, Wyndham Clark, I thought were great episodes, Ricky Fowler. And what I think that sometimes maybe I mistakenly forget when I'm running stat models with 5% weighted on this category and this category is, how does a player feel? How do they feel about their game? Where's their confidence level at? Where's their motivation? What sort of narratives are surrounding? What's going on in their world? Like, you could see how much last year was weighing on Rory McIlroy during that sort of series. You could see what Joel Damon was going through outside the ropes on a golf course, the strides that Wyndham Clark had made. And he talked about dealing with struggles and, you know, borderline alcoholism and just drinking and being depressed and being angry all the time on the golf course. And he got with this mental coach who really shifted his focus and became very positive. And I think that I need to maybe get back to looking at press conferences, looking at transcripts, trying to read more into the player and where they're at both mentally and physically, and less sort of about how they've hit their approach shots from 150 to 175 yards in the last 24 months. I think it's the right answer is a blend of both. But I think as this more stuff is introduced, myself and others have maybe forgotten that other aspect of, what are they dealing with? Where's the scar tissue at? Where's their confidence level at? And those kind of metrics that have always been a big factor in betting golf, which is such an individualized sport.
Yeah, I agree with that completely, 100%. I mean, this season, I keep mentioning President's Cup. Regulars who listen to my content will be bored with it. But there's, you know, and all of a sudden, Canadians, Koreans, Australians, South Africa, they all levitate up the leaderboard. And you're seeing non-Ryder Cup year. Yeah, okay, you've got Shane Lowry. Well, yeah, but in general, the Europeans, and it's early, they haven't really done a great deal on the PGA Tour, apart from Matteo Pavon, who was clearly a rookie on the PGA Tour, comes across from the DP World Tour, shocks everybody. Wow, we've actually got some DP World Tour players that can play on the PGA Tour. Yeah, and that's one of the things that I've enjoyed this year. We've had some, clearly the 10 qualifiers have gone across. We've had ups and downs. Yeah. McIntyre hasn't done a lot, but there's been some players there that have really hit their straps, that have really said to the PGA, so yeah, we can compete. We can win tournaments in the United States. And that took me by surprise. But going back to your original question, I think reading around player interviews is important. Trying to understand motivations, trying to find world golf ranking cutoffs, this kind of backstory that these guys, their agents and their teams are constantly talking about.
Right.
Yeah. That's what kind of drives, that can drive results, that can drive reasons why that player all of a sudden, wow, where did that come from? And it's, there's always that we don't understand. These golfers are not a strokes gained model. They are human beings who are being spoken to by myriads of different people within their own teams. You know, you can imagine with a lot of these players as well, they know that they're playing well. They're playing well in the pro-am on the Tuesday or just in general. And, you know, oh, wow, look, my odds are shortening on the odds boards. And some of these guys just can't cope with it. And all of a sudden they're firing in 78 on a Thursday.
Yeah.
It just happens. And you can, over time, you do pick out players that statistically, from a modelling perspective and a strokes gain perspective, are excellent players, because you know, most of them are. Mm-hmm. They just haven't got strokes gain mental strength.
Yes. That's a great point.
We're trying to find winners.
Yeah. And one of the things, you know, I wanted to touch on, because we're yet to we're recording this Sunday morning before the final round at Bay Hill. Scottie Scheffler's on top of the leaderboard. It's been nearly a year. Next week at the Players' Championship, I'm not counting the Hero World Challenge, will be a full calendar year before world number one has a win. I don't have the numbers. Maybe I need to tweet Justin Ray or someone, but I would imagine it's been a long time since the last world number one hasn't won within a calendar year, if he doesn't win this week. He's on the top. He seemed to be at peak frustration levels on that front nine. Like, I saw him turn to Ted Scott and yell something at him, and like was very aggressive with his hand motions, and seemed like he was ready to snap his putter over his knee. And then all of a sudden on the back nine, something clicked. Now we have this great leaderboard with him and Wyndham Clark, who had the potential rules violation. But it looks to be sort of shaping up at Bay Hill this week. What do you think in terms of the final round? Are you looking for anything specifically that could dictate how you may bet the Players' Championship next week?
Yes, there are certain key statistics I'm really, really keen on this week. We can go into that in slightly more detail in a short while. But if you're asking me, Steve, who's going to? I've got not, yeah, with that kind of field, with that kind of gap between what I mean. And isn't it refreshing? I don't want to go off on this, but isn't it refreshing to see a PGA Tour tournament that isn't 17 to 24 under par, the winning score?
100%. Yeah,
that's actually got some rough that's penal, some greens that have a little bit of release on them.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's putting up a stern test. And all of a sudden, we've got the elite players on the PGA Tour competing going into a Sunday.
Yeah, and you know what? Last week, and I'm very close. I live a few minutes down the road from PGA National.
Yeah,
and I know you do. The PGA Tour, I think, is implementing this, where I don't know the name of it. It's some sort of tournament setup committee, where I think the idea is eventually they want to take over the setup on all tournaments across the board. And they made some changes to PGA National with widening the fairways, softening the golf course. They changed number 10 to a par 5, obviously. Yeah. And I hope that they don't do this. And I hope that they will continue to reward superintendents who will push the limits on actually having penal and difficult rough. I don't care that the players complain about it. I think that the majority of fans and the majority of people that, you know, are trying to watch this event on television prefer not only to see bogey and double bogey in play, like we saw happen to Will Zalatoris on the back nine. If that rough isn't up, he never makes that bogey. Yeah. Like, that is exciting. That is dramatic. And it also, in turn, gets you the best leaderboard, which is what major championships in places like the US Open and the Open Championship have always understood, that if you make the test tough, the players that are more equipped to take that examination will rise to the top.
I think homogenizing the PGA Tour from a scoring perspective is the wrong thing to do. Mm-hmm. And we've always seen with the PGA Tour, you get your American Express tournaments, the old Bob, I classify it as the Bob Hope Lottery from years and years ago. Yeah, 30 under par, get that. But we also used to have, and you know, you'd get your transitions, the Copperhead course at Innisbrook. Mm-hmm. You would get Quail Hollow. You would get major championship venues and tougher venues like the Florida Swing, where the scoring was, you know, anything under single digit, so 11, 12 under, would be winning that tournament. And if you were sort of 7 to 8 under, you're probably top 10-ing. This journey of, I think what they're trying to do is appease the players,
right?
To try 100%. And stop players complaining and then getting to a point where they go, we're not going to stick with the PGA Tour, we're going to go to LIV.
Yeah,
I think
everything is to
direction.
Everything, it feels like, from the increase in the purses, from the shrinking of fields in these signature events, which actually some of the players have been for this week. I heard Wyndham Clark and Rory talk about it, I believe, and then some have been critical of, like some comments from Lucas Glover. But I think these increasing the purses, shrinking the fields, making the tournaments easier is all to appease the players. And I think what they're seeing is ultimately what ends up happening, though, is you get a Jake Knapp, which we care about, and you get a Grayson Murray, and you get these guys who win, but they're losing viewership. I think they're losing fans and the separation in the game. How much have you tracked LIV? I mean, I know, like, where I woke up this morning and saw, you know, Anthony Kim shot a 65 today, which was great for him. He was 5 under par, I believe, which was good to see. Yeah. I had wondered before that how some of the LIV players, if they were all on board with him sort of joining that tour, they've relinquished the OWGR. We get what is considered the deepest, best, what had always been considered the deepest and best field in golf at the Players Championship. And part of me is a little disappointed that I feel like a third, in my opinion, a third of the top 25 players in the world aren't going to be here this week. Do you think within, I'll say 2 years, Steve, that this thing comes back together and that these players are allowed to rejoin and play sporadically 3 to 4 PGA Tour tournaments? Or is this merger cooled and dead in the water?
I hope it happens.
Okay.
From the way, you know, the politics has moved since Christmas and just before Christmas, you know, with the deadline or whatever, it would look like that the actual split is hardening, which is far more concerning.
Yeah.
Because from a PGA Tour perspective and from your perspective being there over in the United States, of course, the United States has always been number one for golf. In the world, the PGA Tour was the biggest tour. It's the biggest market for golf. Understand all of that. And clearly, from an American perspective, with baseball, with American football, with a whole raft of different sports that you've got, you guys dominate those sports. The issue we've got here is with the PGA Tour versus LIV is that clearly the LIV Tour is funded by the PIF. It's funded by Saudi Arabia, and clearly they have got extremely deep pockets, probably deeper pockets than the PGA Tour have got, and that's with the new funding that they've got.
Yes.
So this entrenchment is very, very dangerous for the PGA Tour, in my humble opinion, and, you know, I don't really tend to know what I'm talking about. I get that, but these are just my views. That isn't what we want, though. I was far more excited when they were talking about merging it back together. Now, I don't know where in my mind, the only thing that could potentially bring this back together is someone like, clearly, the Masters and the Majors saying, this really does have to stop. We have to start bringing everyone back under the same umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that might not even mean that LIV and PGA Tour merge again, but they can run concurrently and they can have events where they do actually have players competing with each other. Something needs to happen because, as you said, it's just not happening. It's not helping the product. It's not helping with golf in general. It certainly isn't. It isn't growing the game, which you keep hearing. It's far from that, isn't it? It's not driving golf at all. It's just
dividing golf. Yeah,
it's dividing golf, and it's demoralizing because guys like us that love golf, but we love the betting side of it. It's sad to see. I want to see the best players at the Players Championship.
Yes,
but at the moment, all we do is see the best players on the PGA Tour, and we know that there's 25, 30, 35 players that are playing. Where were they playing this? I mean, you said to me, how much interest do I take? Since I've been up this morning over here Sunday, I've only just looked at the leaderboard. Answer won in a playoff.
Yeah, I saw that. I know.
Remember old Abe Answer? He was always a great pick for the players, wasn't he? Decent driver, decent approach play.
I remember having Cam Smith, the players. Dustin Johnson was always very good at the players. So I miss these guys, and I hope that they're able to come back. I don't, like you, I don't really know where the politics stand on it. It seems like the two parties have cooled, while it seems like the players have warmed to the idea of a merger. You hear comments from Rory, and they seem to be coming around to more open, and they understand. I think while even though they may not like the idea of it, they understand that what's best for the game is them all to come back together, even the PGA yeah. Tour players. So we'll kind of see where that goes. Let's get into, I want to talk a little course preview here. Let's talk a little bit about TPC Sawgrass. I know you're one of the best at sort of breaking down courses, and I have some notes here and I want your opinion as well. Okay, here's what I got, Steve. 1980 Pete Dye design. Pete Dye is back. Typically, what I think of the Sawgrass, it is carnage. There is the most severe penalty for a very minute miss of any course on the PGA Tour. Over the last 6 years, I have in my notes that about 50% of first timers have made the cut. Very few finish inside the top 10. So it is a little bit, in my opinion, of a course history spot. The rough is up once again. I'll be there next week. Excited to see it. But last year, they moved it from a 2.5-inch to a 3.5-inch rough at TPC Sawgrass. We saw it play a little harder. And that, according to the GCSAA, is going to be back at 3.5 again this season. They say in their thing that water is in play on all 18 holes. I don't really think that's true. It may be, you know, off to the side, but there is a ton of water. Unlike the first 2 weeks in Florida with Bay Hill and PGA National, Poa Trivialis greens at TPC Sawgrass now. So it will be the sixth event of 10 on the schedule this season that are predominantly featuring a Poa strain of grass on the greens. 5,500 square feet in the greens, nearly 2,000 feet less on average than what we saw at Bay Hill. It's really kind of difficult, in my opinion, to come up with a great comp course. I have Harbortown, the Stadium Course, PJ West, TPC Scottsdale a little bit. What I found is the Hawaii courses, which is a weird one, Steve, because Kapalua and Wailea, we've seen a really good crossover in terms of winners between Cam and Rory and JT. It is the par threes here are very unique. Of course, everyone will know the 17th hole for the Island Green is the most famous hole probably in golf, but it is the shortest total yardage cumulative on the par threes of any course on the PGA Tour. Data Golf has it ranked as the seventh most difficult in terms of putting course on tour, and the cut probability is just very, very hard to predict. I think it was 2020. It was the year before COVID, so it may have been 2019, I had that 16 of the top 32 players on the odds board that week, so half of the top 32 missed the cut, which is almost impossible to think of in terms of any other tournament being like that. Scottie Scheffler won last year in very anticlimactic fashion by 5 shots at this event. That was, his last win. And interested in your sort of thoughts on this as someone who's gone back and probably covered this event and has historical stats dating back 15 years, like you said, in 2019, they moved this event to March. It has not played nearly as firm or as fast since. Multiple players, including Rory and Justin Thomas, have made comments that they essentially threw away all their old notes from prior to 2019. Is that something that you have done? Are you looking at any data from before then, or did you pretty much have to rewrite your opinions on the golf course over the last 5 or 6 years?
I think we're four renewals in now on this March timing, and I have effectively written off all of the previous data.
Okay.
I'm just working through McIlroy, Thomas, Cam Smith, Scottie Scheffler. So 16 under, 14 under, 13 under in absolutely horrendous conditions, Cam Smith.
The 1 year, yeah.
Yeah, and Scottie Scheffler, 17 under. Now, bearing in mind, did he win by 4 last year?
Five.
So so there you go. I mean, the guys that were finishing second were still shooting 12 under.
Yeah.
That just shows you. I tell you what my summary for this course is. I wrote a little ditty on this yesterday, actually. For how short the stadium course is, yard for yard, it's probably the most difficult short course on the PGA Tour. That makes it, in my opinion, Pete Dye's best design. Creating such a tough test on a course that is only 7,275 yards and a par 72 with four par fives shows the level of thought, great design and trickery that Dye has put into the stadium course. Yes, that's crazy. By the way, they have actually extended one of the par fours this year.
Which one?
I didn't know if you were aware of that. They've extended the par five ninth. They're taking it up from 583 to 602 yards on the scorecard. So that's making the stadium course this year play 7,275 yards in length.
Okay.
Still short. Yeah, I mean, it's material. Material isn't making huge difference, but having a par 72 of sub 7,300 yards with four genuine par fives, and you see scores. Okay, Scheffler won by five. You know, you've got guys there shooting 12, 13 under across. It's just an incredible design. The penalties here are so stark. It's amazing. If you're a DraftKings player and you constantly fade chalk, the Players' Championship is just heaven for you. It's heaven for you, isn't it?
Yeah. Here's your week. Because then you think of it, like, you can miss by 1 yard can be a great look at birdie or potentially an eagle and double bogey. Like, I had, you know, Scotty played, I believe, last year in the final round with the two closest to him headed into that. And he had a big lead were Minwoo and Cam Davis last year. And they both shot 74 and 76. So really no one threatened him. Tyrrell Hatton shot a final round 65 to sort of move up. I have here, if you're with us on YouTube, sort of how the course played. You see 16, of course, is the easiest hole on the course. The par five there played nearly a half a stroke under par. 18, though, I think it's a great finishing hole. Was the most difficult and is the most difficult every single year. Every single round, a 472-yard par four that played nearly 0.3 of a stroke over par. And then 17 always plays over par, particularly on Sunday. You know, they made the change. What was it? Is it the, yeah, the 12th year played?
They turned it into a drivable par four that then no one wanted to drive at. So then they've changed it back to a standard kind of length.
Yeah, it looks like last year on Sunday, though, it played 307 was the second easiest hole on the course that day. But yeah, you know, it's like you mentioned, for me, if I'm going to look in one data point more than others this week, I'm going to just weigh approach play. You look at the guys on the leaderboard last year and they all sort of dominated on approach. I believe here are the top five on approach last year. It was Morikawa number one, Hoagie, who finished in third, Hatton, who finished in second, Scheffler, who finished in first, and Victor Hovland, who finished in third. So, you know, four of the top five were all and also in the top five in approach, which isn't extremely uncommon. Rahm was also up there last year, I should mention, but if you're looking at the data, but he actually only ended up playing one round of this tournament last year and withdrew with a stomach virus, which coincidentally I dealt with earlier this week and was no fun. But if I'm going to weigh one stat more than others this week, I'm definitely looking at approach play more than anything else. What about you, Steve?
When I look at the going, you know, through this March situation, so now we've moved to March, soft the course, overseed, whatever. If I just look at where the champions have ended up for each individual skill discipline, just average it through. Strokes gained off the tee, an average of 21st place of those that missed the cut, made the cut. Okay. Approach, fifth. Around the green, 15th. Tee to green, 10th. Strokes gained putting, 34th place. Wow. That's incredible.
And that's Cam gained a million strokes putting when he won.
And Joe, this is the point, isn't it? Strokes gained putting last year, Scotty Scheffler, 48th.
Yeah.
Justin Thomas, 42nd. Rory McIlroy, 45th. Cameron Smith, 35th for tee to green, first for putting.
First, yeah. Yeah, that's what he does.
That's the stadium course. Whoever plays best on the day, it could be a mercurial short game player that's great with their wedges, has a fantastic week with their approach play, and can scramble lights out and just making putt after putt after putt. They can win. And then the next year, one of the best ball strikers and strokes gained tee to green players that we've ever seen in Scotty Scheffler. Peppers his way around, strategizes his way around, and wins by five.
Amazing stuff. Let's look at some names this week. Like I mentioned, Sunday, a lot of the U.S. books have not posted odds yet, but your guys over across the seas, over at Skybet, have some odds up. Let's pull those up now. Okay, no surprise here. Scottie Scheffler is going to be your favorite. I think that that's a pretty good conclusion to come by. He's roughly 8-1 next week. Skybet has Rory McIlroy at 9-1. Victor Hovland third on the board at 14. You've got Xander and Cantlay there, the guys who never win and are always 16-1 that we talked about. Jordan Spieth at 18-1. Hideki Matsuyama now at 20-1. You know, Hideki had an amazing first round the year that this tournament was canceled, and some nice course history here. Spieth has played pretty well here in the past. Of those names, Steven, I'll kind of cut it there at the top. Anyone that you have interest in betting and you're going to have your eyes on when the full, you know, array of sports books release their numbers next week?
Personally, I'd take Scheffler over McIlroy.
Okay.
I just think, for a guy that is so strategic from tee to green, interesting from his winning notes last year, how he mentioned that, you know, they were strategizing about where the best leave was to come up short of greens rather than go too far, because they knew that if they missed the green either side on one particular hole, it was pretty much a bogey. It was that level of detail that Scottie Scheffler has. And we know it's not a putting contest. Saying that, the new putter seems to be working better at Bay Hill. He's positive. Yeah, I know it's marginal, but at least it's marginally positive. That's all he needs to
win.
8-1, of course, it's not a great price that's getting me jumping out of bed in the morning. But personally, I would take Scheffler over McIlroy at the price, over Hovland at the price, and over Cantlay and Xander at 16s. The one player in there that I do like is Matsuyama. And we know with Matsuyama, when he finds his game, he wins in clumps. He can string wins together. He can win 2-3 tournaments in 3-4 outings. I think Matsuyama is a guy, especially with these poor, trivialist overseed greens. I think this is something worthy of discussion, Joe. Just to point out to the viewers and the listeners of the podcast, these greens are poa trivialis overseed across Tiff Eagle Bermuda grass. Courses that have the exact same green agronomy are TPC Scottsdale, Copperhead at Innisbrook, where they play the Valspar, Harbortown, and TPC Louisiana, where they play the team event. They also have similar greens at PGA West. They've got Tiff Dwarf Bermuda grass. They've got You've got TP San Antonio, where they play the Valero. They're champion Bermuda grass, and so are the ones that they've got at Quail Hollow. Where did Hideki traditionally dominate for a period of time? It was at Scottsdale with these poa trivialis overseeded greens. I think they play with less grain. I think they play a little bit more bent grass-like, and Hideki has always been the kind of player that's far more bent grass positive than Bermuda grass positive. He clearly gets on well with the course. It's the Hideki number. That's the kind of my early lean on Sunday that we're recording this, is Hideki Matsuyama.
Yeah. I looked at Rory. I want a reason to take Rory. There are some strides that he's made. The putter came around. He had a fantastic back nine on Saturday at Bay Hill. I love the fact that he's changed his schedule. And he talked a little bit about this at Full Swing. And I had wondered, I think he's kind of missing the obvious one, in my opinion. And I've said this sort of for years, but he talked about his frustration with majors, and he's good enough to finish top 10 in these events, but he doesn't feel like he's good enough to win, and he just wants to tear it down to the studs, basically, and rebuild. In my opinion, he should look. Rory takes so much, and he would never put it on anyone else. He wants to take accountability for everything. I think he could use the caddy change. Hasn't won a major with Harry. Won a major since JP. That could be of help for him. I love the fact that he brought in Brad Faxon to the greens at Bay Hill and saw significant improvement there. The driver has been fantastic. He was the first player in the ShotLink era to drive the green on the 10th at Bay Hill yesterday. It's such a weapon for him. But what you mentioned about Scottie Scheffler is like, where's Scottie going to potentially not win the tournament? It's on the greens, but where do you lose the tournament at TPC Sawgrass? It's getting there. All the trouble is getting there. It's the water. It's missing fractionally with a 150-yard iron shot or missing the fairway by 6 yards to the left on any of these holes that are bounded by water. He just doesn't do that. He's going to get it to the green effectively. He's going to be in the fairway. He's going to be on the green. And that is where you are going to gain so many strokes on the field here, because guys are going to get those two-stroke penalties. They're going to be in the hazards, and he's much less likely to do that. He's just going to have to be steady from 15 to 20 feet, and he should be right there at the top. You had some great points about Hideki. I'm not eager necessarily to bet any one of these guys at the top. This sort of next middle tier range kind of has my attention. You've got Will Zalatoris. I'll bring it back up here. Is sort of dropping now to 22-1. Justin Thomas at 22. Ludwig, Morikawa, Homa, Burns. These guys in the mid to high 20s. I have some interest in a number of them. I'm going to pay attention, Steve, to this Morikawa number. He had a terrible Friday and was awful at Bay Hill, but the approach numbers have been really solid here. I think if I could get like a 28 or 30 when the sports book here, I will be more than inclined to take that. 65 opening round here at TPC Sawgrass last year, which he was the first round leader. Here's the thing. This last 36, he's hitting 70% of fairways. Tour average is like 55%. So he's going to hopefully be able to mitigate the damage with the water that is bounding the majority of most of these holes. He led the field last year in strokes gained approach. He gained over 9 strokes on approach at this event last year. I think that the yardage being shorter, you mentioned it's turned into, can you hit the fairways? Can you hit, let's say, 145-yard shot close and avoid severe penalty? I really trust Colin here. I'm not so much worried about the putter at this event that I would be at others. So Morikawa has my attention. Burns has my attention. I have him this week. He just can't avoid bogeys right now, Steve, which is problematic, but he's making a ton of birdies. He can score with the best of them. He's won twice in Florida at the Valspar at Innisbrook, which shares the same Poa greens, these Poa Trivialis greens are really unusual in Florida. There are not many courses, particularly south of Central Florida, that can even deploy these. So the fact that he's won twice in Florida on the same greens is great. He, of course, won at Austin last year on the Pete Dye course, the match play course there that they play that's no longer in effect. But that has a ton of risk reward, these sort of Pete Dye eye lines that you look for, similar in a mold to TPC Sawgrass. So I just love the way he's playing. He's been really accurate with the driver. For him, it's just about mitigating damage. I know that he's good enough to make birdies. I know he's going to score on the par fives, avoid the water, which is a tall task for him. And I think that he could find attention, but they have his number now at 28, same thing, 28 to 30, I think are good prices. And those are the two guys in the central range here that sort of have my attention. How about you?
Just a point you raised there, Austin Country Club, that also shares this Tiff Eagle, Bermuda grass overseeded with Poa Trivialis. So I didn't mention it earlier because it's not on the current list. But yes, that's a very good spot. Just out of interest on Sam Burns, 5 PGA Tour victories, 4 of them on Bermuda grass, 3 of them on Poa Trivialis overseeded greens. Scotty Scheffler, 6 PGA Tour victories, 4 of those on these Poa Trivialist overseed greens. So they absolutely thrive on them.
Yeah.
That's worthy of note, in my opinion. Why is it about Sam Burns you like? I mean, bearing in mind that I've tipped Sam Burns at Phoenix, mm-hmm. Riviera, and this week at the Arnold Palmer. So I'm on the Sam Burns boat. I'm on the bus. I'm really... What is it about him that you like so much? I like the way that clearly from the southeast of the United States, from Louisiana, he just tends to get on well on Bermuda grass golf courses and courses that tend to be sort of flat and this kind of Florida feel to them with water. So I think Burns is a good, good shout for next week. Is that the kind of angle that you're coming from, Joe?
With Burns? I think he possesses all the tools. He's a terrific athlete, big, strong, powerful. He's honed in his dispersion with the driver. Yeah. He's hitting more fairways on average this year than he ever has. Yeah. Has shown the ability to win in a young career. I don't feel like he's that far off from a Xander Schauffele or a Patrick Cantlay. I really don't. I mean, those two have been great in sort of Ryder Cups, but you look at who's won more in the last 3 to 4 years, and absolutely, it's Sam Burns. And I feel like he's what he's really lacking right now is a big time performance and a Sunday in contention at a major championship or a big time event like the Players. And should he take that next step, whether it be this week or whether it be Augusta National or whether it be Valhalla, which I think is a great fit for Sam Burns, once he's there in a final group on Sunday and he's within one or two of the lead, I think he starts getting that recognition and we start to price him in that 18 to 20 range. But I do still feel like you're getting that discount on him at this point, and I feel like the caliber of his play is right there with the 4th, 5th, 6th best player in the world, whether it's Cantlay, Homa, you know, Jordan Spieth, these type of guys. I think that he's within that mold. I think that he's more powerful than them. I think that he can make birdies with anybody on the PGA Tour. Right now, it's sometimes I think it could be potentially about decision-making in situations where he gets himself out of play and just trying to find a way to make par and even make bogey in some situations. I followed him closely this week, and it seems like he's 1 back, and then all of a sudden he's 4 back because he'll make a key mistake. But I just think that he's ready and primed to sort of make the next step in his career, and he's right on the precipice of being what I believe to be like a top 6-7 player in the world.
I'd say what player at deeper odds that I will throw out there, and you can shoot me down in flames, and he actually, for the first 2 rounds at Bay Hill, performed brilliantly. Especially with, guess what, his approach play and he's around the green game. And that's what I really want. Someone that's literally right now decent with the approaches and very, very confident when they miss a green, around the green, chipping. Brian Harman, 66-1 Sky Bet have got him priced up at. And he's in the top, I know, the world rankings, blah, 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 blah. But he's in the world's top 10. 66-1 on Brian Harman is a price that I'm going to find difficult to actually turn down, especially if he has a decent Sunday at Arnold Palmer. He's the sort, you just look at where he's played well. He comes very much from that sort of Cam Smith school you mentioned. Yeah. Very good at Kapalua. Cam Smith, of course, won the Sony Open at Waialae.
Yeah.
You look at where Harman's results are. It's a very similar pattern to what you see out of Cam Smith. Similar kind of players in a way, aren't they? Not so great off the tee, but fantastic, you know, with an iron and spot, you know, fantastic around the green and very, very strong putters. It was just interesting that Harman seemed to have found something in the opening Thursday and Friday at Bay Hill, where he has been struggling for most of the season so far. But that 66-1 number on Harman, I think, is a particularly strong number. What are your views on Wyndham Clark and TPC Sawgrass? Do you think it's a course that can correlate to him as well?
I do. I feel like he's underpriced, as always, right now. I mean, if we're talking world rankings, I think he's number 7. Should he win this week in Bay Hill, he probably vaults into the top 5, and that would be his, what, 4th
win? Would you take Russell Henley at 40-1, or would you take Wyndham Clark at 40-1? For me, it's not even a question.
And Sung Jae Im's a mess. Jason Day is all over the place. Yeah, you take Wyndham Clark.
Yeah. So yeah, he's another one that I'm putting some serious thought into. I don't see it being a Cam Young particularly. Of course, I think this week suited Young more. You know, buccaneering off the tee. I think somewhere like Sawgrass will. I think it frustrates players that if you look at their stroke tee to green numbers, I think it frustrates or it takes a lot of mental strength for players who, when you look at their breakout of tee to green, be it off the tee, around the green, and approach, a lot of that tee to green positive number is off the tee. I think this Clark course plays far more to those that are better with their irons and have a very, very strong elite around the green, and scrambling game. And that, to me, shouts not so much Cam Young or Will Zalatoris. It's those more compact players. We mentioned him earlier. It's like an Abe Anser. It's like a Colin Morikawa. It's players that, because around TPC Sawgrass, you can gain serious off the tee by hitting the ball moderate length and dead straight. Simple as that. And you read a lot of quotes from players saying it doesn't matter if you're either Rory McIlroy or you are an Abe Anser or a Colin Morikawa, you're pretty much, your approach play is in the same 20 to 30 yard part of every fairway on a predominant amount of these holes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's a club down golf course, isn't it? It's club down golf course.
Yeah, but you know, they have mentioned since they moved to Marsh that I know Rory mentioned he's able to sort of deploy the driver a lot more here. It will depend on the conditions. I feel like there's not much rain. It's early. You know, this is the Sunday before. It doesn't look, because I checked the forecast because I'm heading up there, it doesn't look like there's going to be much rain this week. No. It all looks pretty good. But we have had the rainiest winter I can ever I've ever had here in Florida. This past year has been the worst, and I've lived down here for 12 years now. It's just been nonstop, and you see the softness. You know, they've been able to firm up Bay Hill a good bit, but I do feel like it's played softer than we've seen traditionally. Obviously, PGA National is softer, so it will be interesting. I know they've got the sub-air greens there, I believe. I'm sure they'll be able to get it playing very well. You know, another guy right there with Harmon, Steve, that kind of has my interest a little bit is Harris English. I have him this week.
Joe, I look Harris English again. I've been all over him so far in 2024. Okay. And then you look at Harris English's TP Sawgrass form and you go, what? How can you miss so many cuts, consecutive cuts here? Yeah. But theoretically, He's straightened the driver a lot this year.
Mm-hmm.
His driving's become a lot straighter, a lot better. And we know with English approach around the green, fantastic Bermuda, fantastic Bermuda, Poa-Trivialist putter. So, I get that. And again, 66 to 1 I'm seeing.
Yeah, 66 to 1. He's playing great this week. He's top five in approach at Bay Hill.
I'm on him.
I think he was 17th at Waste Management, 7th at Riviera at Genesis. Yeah. So he's trending, but you're right. Obviously, the course history is problematic.
It's tragic.
It is.
That doesn't mean it's going to stay, does it?
No. I have interest. If it's 66 or 70, I'll probably be there.
Yeah, completely
agree. Any long shots? Let me give you two real quickly that I like. Also, the guy that's top of the approach list this week at Bay Hill was really good last week at PGA National on approach, where historically his numbers were horrendous, and ended up finishing, I think I mentioned, ended up finishing third at this event last year. Tom Hoagie is 150 to 1. And the other one I have is, I don't know if he's still here. Let me see if I could find him now. They may have dropped his price since I looked. Okay, he's down to 100. He was 150 when he sent me this a few days ago. But Erik van Rooyen, this guy's playing fantastic golf over the last 6 months. One of the best ball strikers anywhere in the world. Should be a great fit for him. Played unbelievable at PGA National. He's just been in really good form. He had a great run at the Players. I'm not sure if it was last year or the year prior, but but I think is another great fit. If they continue to price him in triple digits right now, those are two guys in the sort of long shot range and a season of long shots that I will definitely have my eyes on for the Players' Championship. What about you? You got anybody like really long odds you like?
Great question. Just take last year, 125-1, Tom Hoagie finished third. You also had Cam Davis in there at 300-1. You had Minwoo Lee at 150-1. Rose was 100-1.
Yeah.
David Lingmuth, 1,000-1, and he placed in the each way places. And Justin Sir, 200-1. It is going to happen. You are going to have elite players ejecting, and you will get players coming from a lot further down the actual odds board placing. One player I do like the look of at the moment, who I think is playing particularly good golf, would be Tom Hoagie. There's also something potentially in a Austin Ekroat, do you think? Because he's playing some absolutely fantastic golf at the moment. And I believe he was quite close to the top 10 at the Arnold Palmer before the wind got up yesterday and blew him off the course. But I think something like this that's going to be not single digits winning, but that 12 to 15 under par might suit him a bit better. I mean, Austin Ekroat is playing some phenomenal golf right now. I'm seeing 150-1.
Yeah, and we... My buddy Ryan was talking about this. You know, we look at Shane Lowry this week, and we tend to sometimes zoom out too far, I think, in analytics in golf. And we're looking at, you know, when you look at the last 36 rounds, Steve, for some of these guys, you're going back to August.
Yeah.
For some of these players. Like, if you zoom in and you just play the guys who have been really good over the last month and you shrink it down to like 12 rounds, who in these type of players, these long shots players, I feel like this is of extra importance. They aren't going to sustain form for 36 rounds. They aren't. That's not the type of players they are. There are 75th ranked players in the world. When you look at Van Ruyen, when you look at Hoagie, when you look at Ekroat, when you look at these guys, you expect them to peak, and then it's naturally going to come back down throughout the year. So when you look at someone who is playing with, you know, extreme confidence, I don't mind it at all. I was looking back. So Van Ruyen didn't play the Players last year, but in 2022, he led the field. He gained 11.3 strokes on approach at the Players. So
yeah, he's in great form right now. What about Cashmere Keith? 125-1 on Cashmere Keith. He's playing some fantastic golf from tee to green this season. He's flying from tee to green. I don't see Keith Mitchell winning. And we were talking at the top of the show about taking each way places. I would take as many each way places as physically humanly possible on Keith Mitchell. But he's the sort that would be around that bottom of that top page of the leaderboard, or someone that would come off the pace on a Sunday firing a 63 and lo and behold finishes tied for seventh. He's that kind of player for sure.
I love it, man. Well, I know that you've got a big day ahead of you. You're going to see your mom out there, and happy Mother's Day to her and all the other mothers over there in England. Thank you for joining me, Steve. What all do you have planned this week in terms of content, in terms of podcasts? When is your show coming out? And let the people know where they can all find that.
Betting preview will be out Monday lunchtime over here in the UK. So that's kind of, well, that it'd be like 7 a.m. Eastern over in the States. That's a golf betting system. You can come to the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel. There'll be a golf betting show on Monday. And then, of course, the Golf Betting System podcast. We're actually hitting this week 750,000 downloads with our Players' Championship podcast. So we've hit 750,000 downloads on our golf podcast this week. So come along and give it a listen. There'll be myself on there, Paul Williams, who tends to look after the DP World Tour, and Barry O'Hanrahan. They're in really good form. They've picked up Matsuyama. They've picked up Knapp. Paul at the moment is on Sean Norris, who's literally tied for the lead on the DP World Tour as they go into the heart of the back nine right now. So those guys are on really hot form with their tips. So, yeah, come and take our content. It's Golf Betting System. You can follow me at Bamford Golf on X.
At Bamford Golf. If you aren't following him, he's on the Mount Rushmore of like the four people you have to follow in this industry. I really appreciate it. It was an honor to have you on Preferred Lines, and would love to talk again soon, Steve. Thank you. Have a great Sunday, and best of luck next week at the Players' Championship.
Look after yourself, Joe. Thank you.
All right. Have a great one. All right, gang. Great to have Steve join us. Like I mentioned, the show is out early this week. I hope that you enjoy it. Like, share it with a friend. We're gearing up toward major championship season, March through August, right? This is when us people who create golf content really rely on you and hope that we can reach some new ears. Hopefully we can get some new eyeballs to see us. And by you subscribing to this show on YouTube, that helps me reach those goals. I appreciate each and every one of you. Like I mentioned, I'm going to be on site at the Players. It is the very first time. I've been trying for 2 years maybe to get the PGA Tour to credential me into a tournament. They finally have given me a badge. I'm going to be in the media room. I don't know if I'm going to ask any questions yet. I'm a little nervous about it, but I'm going to feel my way around. If you are there by any means, shoot me a DM. I would love to meet as many as you as humanly possible next week. I hope that you have a great week. Good luck at the Players' Championship, and we will talk soon. Good luck, gang. This has been Preferred Lines. Peace.